at the city. These letters wound up at Southern Methodist University, where KERA's Eric Austin sorts through the collection.
Pamela Anderson pushes a cart into the SMU DeGoyer Library. On it are two boxes filled with hate.
So we're going to get some folders out. The first one is actually from letters dated the day of the assassination.
Anderson is an archivist here, and she knows these letters better than anyone. Just hours after President Kennedy was killed, people whipped out their pens and typewriters and dashed off their thoughts. The letters came in from across the country.
California, there's Minnesota, New York.
And started pouring in to the Dallas mayor's office. 48 hours later, Lee Harvey Oswald was killed, just blocks away from the site of the assassination. And more letters arrived, many drip with anger. Take this one from Massachusetts.
You and the people of your city should hang your heads in shame for the grievous and heinous crime committed in Dallas. This is not a mere accident.
And this letter from California.
How in heaven could you let Oswald get shot? What kind of police protection do you have there? They must be incompetent.
That's Jeffrey Engel, director of the SMU Center for Presidential History. Even after reading the letters many times, he's still surprised by them.
They're not writing their congressman. They're not writing their mayor. They're writing someone else's mayor. And so really, this is almost a sense of just screaming into the wind, which apparently is something that people throughout the world feel the very human need to do.
In recent months, more scholars and researchers have sought out these letters, yearning to know more about the mood of the country in the fall of 63. Some letters are scrawled on scraps of cream and pale blue paper. The ink is smudged, the handwriting hard to read. Others are written in black ink in the neatest cursive. Some typed on business letterhead. All were sent to Dallas Mayor Earl Cabell, who gave his personal papers to SMU. During JFK's fateful visit, Cabell rode in the presidential motorcade. Soon after Kennedy was killed, reporters asked him if what happened would tarnish the city's reputation forever.
I don't think that this will hurt Dallas as a city, because I believe that the people of the nation realize that this was not an act of Dallas, not an act of the true thinking of Dallas. This was the act of a maniac.
But many Americans disagreed.
And if the police were any good, perhaps our president would still be alive.
You're emotionally against your city.
What kind of stinking police department lets a striptease criminal records man?
I hope the people of Dallas are proud of their behavior. Southern hospitality indeed.
The mayor responded to several of the letters, often defending his town. There were notes of support. One even came from Buffalo, where President McKinley was killed. The letter expressed sympathy and understanding for what Dallas was going through. One child from Minnesota sent a note saying her teacher had informed her of what had happened to Kennedy. But she had more pressing questions. Did the mayor have a big home? More importantly, did he have a horse? The mayor wrote back.
I do not live in a house that is nearly so big as the president. My house is medium size, has a nice lawn, and a few trees in the front backyard. I have not owned a horse for many years.
Tucked away in all those folders filled with hate, a little laughter. Eric Austin, KERA News.
You can read excerpts of some of the letters on our website, keranews.org. And all week we're producing a series of memories by North Texans called JFK Voices. This evening we hear from someone who wasn't even born when Kennedy died, but the assassination has colored how she sees Dallas.
I'm Shannon Hall from Parker. Driving with my grandpa through Dallas for the first time when I was young, I was probably like 7 or 8 years old. And he told me everything that had happened. And it was the first time I had driven through Dallas. And I got a crazy feeling like I was going to get shot. And so ever since then, like, I've always had that in the back of my head. And I like seeing Dallas now, though, because, like, I love going here now. Everything is kind of, like, building, like, the Arts District. And it just seems like a fun place to be. But then that fear or kind of, like, weird tingle down your spine, you kind of have it every time you go.
You can find more JFK Voices at keranews.org. Share your story by email jfk@kera.org or tweet with the hashtag JFK Voices. We'll also cover Friday's anniversary ceremony live from 11 to 1. Unlocking the mystery of Alzheimer's disease hasn't focused much on the immune system, but it may connect Alzheimer's and multiple sclerosis, according to researchers at UT Southwestern and Texas Health Presbyterian. Dr. Nancy Monson of UT Southwestern explains in this week's edition of Vital Signs.
We took a spinal fluid from patients who had Alzheimer's disease, and we looked to see if the immune system was present. And that turned out to be true. The types of immune cells that were in the spinal fluid were the same as they are in multiple sclerosis.
Does this mean a link between Alzheimer's and multiple sclerosis?
There might be the same play of immune cells in both diseases. So what that means is that some of the treatments that we use for multiple sclerosis that affect the immune system might be useful in treating patients with Alzheimer's disease as well.
How did you come to find this out?
We were studying MS and the immune system. So Dr. Rong Zhang at Texas Presbyterian actually came up with the idea of calling me to see if I would be interested in looking to see if the immune system was involved in Alzheimer's disease. He became interested in the immune system because one of his other things that he's working on is the role of exercise in the ability of Alzheimer's patients to improve their brain function.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had been reading a little bit about the immune system and how it might affect and improve patients who have Alzheimer's disease.
So the discovery then perhaps represents a change in how you think Alzheimer's disease progresses? Is that
definitely it? Because nobody really thought before that the immune system was involved in Alzheimer's disease at all. And so now that we've shown that the immune system really does have a role in that disease, it will change the way that we try and treat that disease.
Now, I understand that what the thing that's the link or that's similar is what, a massive brain inflammatory response?
Yeah. So there are.
Is that as painful as it sounds?
Well, it could be very bad, but it could be good. We're not quite sure yet what we can say. The immune system does a couple of things. What it's supposed to do is it's supposed to fight bad things like viruses and bacteria and infection. But sometimes the immune system goes wrong, and instead of just fighting bad things in your body, it decides that your body itself is bad. In multiple sclerosis, for example, your immune system thinks your brain is actually an infection. So we're not sure yet if the immune cells that we find in the central nervous system or the brain and spinal fluid of Alzheimer's disease patients or patients at risk to get Alzheimer's disease, if those cells are good or if they're trying to kill off the brain itself.
Does this discovery answer questions about Alzheimer's or does it raise more questions?
We're really at the advent of understanding what this means. It's a completely new frontier for all of us. I think what we have answered is that the immune system does play a role in that disease. And now what we need to figure out is how we can suppress the immune system when it's going bad in that disease and how we can instead turn it around to use it to our advantage in being able to treat those patients.
That was Dr. Nancy Monson talking to KERA's Sam Baker. You can read the study she worked on at breakthroughs.kera.org. You can like KERA News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm BJ Austin.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Chevrolet, maker of the Volt, an electric car also powered by gas to help drivers go the distance and then some. Details at ChevroletVolt.com. From United Healthcare, with information on doctors, treatment options, and cost estimates for patients to make educated health decisions, UHC.com. And from Cabot Creamery Cooperative, Northeast farm families who make cheddar cheese and award volunteers for their commitment at rewardvolunteers.com. This is NPR.
Support for KERA comes from you, our members, and from Cumberland Trust, focusing on people, their needs, and their values, not money management. Cumberland Trust, building relationships with financial advisors. Details at cumberlandtrust.com. Central Market's Holiday Hotline menu with free-range turkey and herb-roasted ribeye, plus sides and desserts. All items are chef-prepared and ready to heat and eat. Details at centralmarket.com. Baird, a proud supporter of the Dallas After School Network, whose programs benefiting local young people are an investment in Texas' future. Information available at dasn.org. Robert W. Baird & Company, member SIPC.
Marketplace is supported by MWW, a global PR firm helping brands matter more through marketing communications and reputation management. Learn more at MWW.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Hey, look, the Dow hit 16,000. What? You wanted more than that? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace.